Listen to me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. Today, from Murdoch University, which is in Australia, comes a study about saffron, S-A-F-F-R-O-N, the herb. And we use it generally in seasoning. Comes in little tiny threads, very expensive. Well, now they have found that it's effective as a complement to antidepressant medications. Well, there are other things you could use that are actually more successful than any known commercial antidepressant, but I'm glad to see that they're now identifying herbs as well. We have about 12 other studies today to share with you on alternative ways of staying healthier and reversing disease. Then I'll be setting some time aside to explain to those who are not up to date on what has happened with WBAI. I'm going to guess that around 1,000 or more phone calls have flooded our office over the last 4 weeks since we were summarily taken off the air. Everyone was, every show. There was a lockout. They came early in the morning, 5 o'clock, locked the doors, and didn't allow anyone in. Then they took out the equipment, not allowing people to broadcast. And so we have been in court fighting them. I'll give you an update on that and give you some perspective. Because unfortunately, a lot of the people, the older listeners in particular, as a group, they don't listen over the internet. So when they don't hear anything, they don't know what to think. They just hear piped-in programming. So we'll address that. Also today, continuing with our Honest Government series, visit Puerto Rico. Now, if you want to go on and you'll get the unedited, and I have to, because we're syndicated all over the place, and so stations say don't send, you know, curse words, and so we respect that. So we've edited them out, but they're absolutely hilarious if you hear them unedited. Then there is a meter guy, the guy who reads your meter. He's testifying before a committee in his state, and he's saying PG&E, that's in California, knows smart meters catch fire. Well, it's nice to hear from someone inside who actually installs them. Also, one of the most powerful discussions against using 5G. It comes from a Dr. Claire Edwards, and it's called The Madness of Putting 53,000 5G Satellites in Space. Yeah, that's how much they're up to now, 53,000. You thought it was bad with 20,000. It's increasing. And last evening, I was watching some of the ads, and all the ads for the wireless focus on the end saying, we're able to get you connected to all things internet faster than ever before, and then 5G. So they have very well-produced professional PR campaigns to make you think that this is the best thing you could possibly have. It is not. We'll explain why. And then we're going to have a little tiny clip. It's only 13 seconds long. And I'm not going to say what it is. You'll hear this as of the end of our program today. Very interesting. And then also, if time permits, I don't think we'll have time today, I read a commentary by Chris Hedges, The Enemy Within. I'd like to share it with you. Also today, on Friday's program, we did an original article, Richard Gell and myself, challenging Wikipedia. That was on Ayurvedic medicine. We let you know that there's over 250 licensed Ayurvedic colleges and universities. There's over 450,000 practitioners. Most are medical doctors. Over 5,500 articles in peer-reviewed literature. You would never know any of that. It's just trashed completely on Wikipedia. So once again, our in-house counsel has written Wikipedia. I will read you that letter and put them on notice. Now, this is the 13th letter, and it's the 65th communication that we've had with no response thus far. So maybe they'll respond to the people who are looking at all this information right now and deciding about class action lawsuits. More on that at a press conference will be happening in the very near future. And then there's a reckoning. Always is, just sometimes takes longer than we would want. Let's begin with the latest on health and healing. New research has shown that saffron can assist adults with depression when it's taken in conjunction with pharmaceutical antidepressants. So then my question is, how would they know which was better, the antidepressant or the saffron? And have you ever noticed any of those ads that say, you know, that this will lower your cholesterol or this will help something, but it also says that in conjunction with lifestyle changes? Well, which was it, the lifestyle changes or the medication? And that's how they get slippery around these issues. So I thought it was good that they're at least acknowledging saffron, but saffron by itself is able to make a difference as well. So that's good. So if you have depression, why not look at all the natural non-toxic remedies that exist, like St. John's wort and theanine, and also rebalance your body chemistry naturally with diet and exercise. Just going for a nice power walk, brisk power walk, for 45 minutes can raise your mood hormones and give you more dopamine hits, and hence the love hormone occurs. And that's important. The endorphins are like our natural opiates that the body creates when we exercise. So why not just exercise? It's one of the best single things you can do for depression. Also from Shinshu University in Japan comes a study about quality over quantity. And here's where they say, interval walking training improves fitness and health in elderly individuals. So in Japan, health-conscious folks, and they've got a lot of them, they're one of the longest-lived nations in the world, have been known to carry around the little meters on the track to see how many steps they walk each day. And the target is 10,000 steps as a foundation for a healthy lifestyle. That's just the foundation. You can go far beyond that. Conscientious walkers can now update their device from a pedometer to a smartphone and forget about 10,000 steps with the latest study. I'm opposed to this because then you have a major corporation, Google, recording all of your exercise. Do you really want them to know? And they just bought another company, I'm going to talk about that tomorrow, that handles all your medical information. So virtually all your medical information will now be available to Google. And we already know what they do with all this information. But anyhow, the takeaway message is walk. Walk and get positive results. So interval walking, walk slow, walk fast, walk slow, walk fast. That's an interval. And you want to walk up to 70% of your maximum capacity for 3 minutes. Then at 40% to recover for the next 3 minutes. And then do it again and again and again and again. And that's interval training. That's really good for you. Also, from the University of Michigan comes a study published in the peer-reviewed journal Science that the immune system targets vitamin B12 pathway to neutralize bacteria. About 1.8 billion people worldwide are infected with a mycobacterium, tuberculosis, and the common and occasional deadly bacterium that causes millions of cases of tuberculosis each year. The bacteria, having co-evolved with humans over millennia, have devised ways of hijacking the nutrients from its human host for its own benefit. Humans have equally complex ways of fighting back. So in this new study appearing in the journal Science, a team led by Michigan medical researchers worked with collaborators at Harvard and discovered a specific mechanism by which a weapon used by the immune system can target the tuberculum, and it's called itaconate, itaconate. So researchers only recently discovered that this particular element in our body, which is produced in large amounts by the immune system when under attack, and it disarms disease-causing bacteria and has been somewhat of a mystery. But now we find out that one strategy to help with this whole process is vitamin B12. And it's an interesting vitamin. We really need it. But if there's low amounts in our cells, it compromises our immune system and our neurological system. And the bioactive form of vitamin B12, called a coenzyme B12, was discovered over 60 years ago. And it really is important for cellular metabolism. I recommend B12 for everyone every day. But now it looks like it can help the immune system fight off different toxic bacteria. And that's good. From Fundam University in China, plus Texas A&M and Michigan State Universities, they all worked on a study together, published in the Journal of American College of Cardiology. And they found that the omega-3 fatty acids, that's the good fatty acids for your heart, are essential nutrients for a variety of benefits that boost general health, like reducing your risk of heart disease, turning down inflammation in the body. And now they're showing that it helps the harmful effect of air pollution. This was published in the Journal of American College of Cardiology, and it found that the vitamin supplementation with fish oil, I would also suggest flaxseed oil, is packed with the omega-3 and has cardioprotective effects against air pollution in highly polluted areas. And when you look at how much you need, you don't need a lot, about 1,500 milligrams a day, it can really impact your body. From the University of Paris in France comes a study about the Mediterranean diet and helping prevent skin cancer. And it showed that a healthy plant-based diet, they're calling the Mediterranean diet, can lower your risk of cancer overall, but also specific skin cancer. So that's good. So when you're on a plant-based diet, you're helping dozens of different things in the body. You're helping lower your cholesterol. You're helping turn down your C-reactive protein and homocysteine and fibrinogen. You're helping lower your blood pressure, your blood sugar. You're helping to detoxify your body. And now it also helps with skin cancer. From the University of Cork, that's C-O-R-K, which is in Ireland, Southern Ireland, a prebiotic-rich diet, that's again your plant-based diet, especially with grapes because they're probiotic, can improve cognitive function and delay decline. This is important because right now worldwide, minimally, we have 50 million people in the world suffering from dementia. In the United States alone, we have 6 million, and that's probably double those who are in the earlier stages, have all the symptoms, but haven't been officially medically diagnosed yet. Well, the organization Brain Renewal explains that the process that facilitates reasoning and thinking ability start to decline. Are you ready for this? In the mid-20s. That's right. By 27, you're already biologically in old age. So as we age, and particularly from middle age, we become increasingly forgetful, struggle to focus, and have trouble solving problems. And middle age right now is about around 37. That's right, 37, you're middle age. Now, that does not mean, however, that we have to accept cognitive decline as an inevitable part of the aging process. At the very least, we can take steps to slow the process down. The new study, published in the journal Nature's Molecular Psychiatry, has concluded that the secret to doing so may lie in maintaining a delicate balance in the gut microbiome. So, increasing prebiotic-rich foods. And, by the way, certainly the probiotic as well, like sauerkraut. So that's what they came up with, and it can make a big difference. Now, we've done a lot of discussion on the gut microbiome. Good food in, clean food in. And clean doesn't mean you go and wash it clean. It means it's clean from pesticides, herbicides, and not grown in the typical nitrogen-based chemical fertilizers. It means healthily grown in a healthy way. Also, another study talking about gut flora, University of British Columbia, published in Frontiers in Microbiology, a study about vitamin D is linked to gut flora diversity. Quite simply, the more sunlight you're exposed to, the exposure to the UVB light, it increases the gut microbiome diversity, and that's important. It's one of the most important nutrients going into the winter months is vitamin D. So either take it as a supplement or make sure that where you're at, you're getting some good sunlight. And from Oxford University, which is in the United Kingdom, antibiotics, even in very low dose in children, can have a negative impact on their health. So they looked at all the patients who were using antibiotics, and at least a quarter of these were with children. And almost two-thirds of these appointments are for coughs, sore throats, or earaches, and illnesses which young people commonly get. And doctors and nurses group these types of illnesses as acute respiratory tract infections, and they're considered to be self-limiting, meaning that the antibiotics have little or no benefit to that illness, to have it go away. Yet at least 30% of these consultations, antibiotics are prescribed. That's just terrible medicine. That's over 13 million alone. 13 million. So it's not only wasteful, but it's also an unintended consequence for the child because it deteriorates their health. So what happens is you build up a resistance. And take an honest look. I mean an honest look at children today. They have autoimmune disease, allergies, inner ear infections. They have chronic congestion, mucus. Why? Historically, you did not see these in a chronic way or in a lot of people. It's the vaccines. And then compounding the vaccines is the antibiotic to treat them. And then compounding that is a faulty diet. So you put all this together, and it's little wonder the children today are being born, many of whom will not outlive their parents. From GreenMed Info, holy basil is a natural alternative to mouthwash. Now, common chemical mouthwashes generally have some chemicals in there, for example, chlorhexidine, which will disrupt the normal bacteria in your mouth that you need, and it also carries risks of side effects. Well, holy basil, that's B-A-S-I-L, also known as Tulsi, T-U-L-S-I, is an Ayurvedic herb that may be just as effective for protecting oral health without the risks of conventional mouthwashes. Now, on Friday, we published an article. Please read it. Go up on prn.fm and read the article that justifies the legitimacy of Ayurvedic medicine versus what Wikipedia tells you, which doesn't legitimize any of that. It has anti-inflammatory properties. The oil's in it. It's an antioxidant, and it turns off inflammation in the mouth, and there's no alcohol in it like a lot of mouthwashes have. So it's really good for the mouth. Something to think about. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break and come right back at you. We're 18 minutes into our program. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. We do a lot of original commentaries on this program. In fact, probably more than any other radio program in the United States. I try to write about 3 original commentaries per week. In addition to that, we do original in-depth investigative reports. The latest was just on Friday, where we did a program dealing with Wikipedia and its mistreatment and miscasting of Ayurvedic medicine practiced by 400 to 500 million people in India currently, with over 450,000 clinicians and graduating from over 250 medical institutions there. They're painting it as quackery. It's anything but. It has a 3,000-year history. So we're doing a lot of original investigative reporting. Tomorrow, the next day, we'll be doing a report on the bias in the media when it comes to the subject of vaccines and freedom of choice, how they're very selective in what they support as far as a woman's right to choose. What about a woman's right to choose what goes into her body? Isn't that her right? especially when she's doing it from informed awareness of the dangers and limitations. But no, that's not the case. So when Chris Hedges writes an article and called The Enemy Within and publishes in Truthdig, I pay attention because I respect Chris. We've had him in a lot of our films. And Chris is concerned, as all of us should be, about democracy. But hold on a second. Is it democracy that's in peril under Trump and others? Or is it that we do not live in a democracy? It is the image of our democracy that is indeed in peril. The deep state, the generals, the bankers, the corporatists, the lobbyists, the intelligence chiefs, the government bureaucrats and technocrats, their intent is on salvaging the brand. Remember I said some time ago, I said that nearly 30 million jobs had been lost between the mid-1970s and today by virtually every administration, didn't matter whether it was Democrats or Republicans, because they're both big business, they're both controlled by the oligarchs. And they find that a brand is what has value, not the product itself. So if there's a brand that can be, let's say, taken from Michigan where a person is making a living wage and put that out to India or China or Bangladesh or Haiti where a person doesn't make a living wage and is worked to death, all they care about is the brand. Protect the brand because the brand is what they really bought the company for. So the deep state, they're up to their eyeballs in making sure that they guard the freedom and liberty of that brand to be marketed. Well, that's the reality that we're faced with today. And the deep state committed the greatest strategy blunder in American history when it invaded and occupied Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, such fatal military fiascos, a feature of all late empires, are called acts of micromilitarism, meaning dying empires historically squander the last capital they have, economic, political, military, on futile, intractable, and unwinnable conflicts until they collapse. They seek in these acts of micromilitarism to recapture a former dominance and lost stature. Disaster piles on disaster. The architects of our imperial death spiral, however, are untouchable. The clueless generals and politicians who propel the empire into expanding chaos and fiscal collapse are successful at one thing, and that is protecting themselves. No one is held accountable. A servile press treats these mandarins with near religious veneration. Generals and politicians, many of whom should have been cashiered or put on trial, or upon retirement given lucrative seats on the boards of the weapons manufacturers, for whom these wars are immensely profitable. They are called upon by a fawning press to provide analysis to the public of the mess they created. They are held up as exemplars of integrity and selflessness and service and patriotism. They're anything but. After nearly two decades, every purported objective used to justify our wars in the Middle East has been upended. The invasion of Afghanistan was supposed to wipe out Al-Qaeda. Instead, Al-Qaeda migrated to fill the power vacuums the deep state created in the wars in Libya, Syria, Iraq, and Yemen. The war in Afghanistan morphed into a war with the Taliban. How'd that work out? Well, they now control most of the country and are threatening to corrupt the corrupt regime we prop up in Kabul. The deep state orchestrated the invasion of Iraq, which had nothing to do with the attacks on 9/11. It confidently predicted it could build a Western-type democracy and weaken Iran's power in the region. Instead, it destroyed Iraq as a unified country, setting warring ethnic and religious factions against each other. Iran, which is closely tied to the dominant Shia government in Baghdad, emerged even stronger. The deep state armed so-called moderate rebels in Syria in an effort to topple President Bashar Assad, But when it realized it could not control the jihadists to whom it had provided $500 million in weapons and assistance, the deep state began to bomb them and arm Kurdish rebels to fight them. These Kurds would later be betrayed by Trump. The war on terror spread like a plague from Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Libya, Yemen, which after 5 years of war is suffering one of the world's worst humanitarian disasters. The financial cost for this misery and death is between $5 trillion to $8 trillion. The human cost runs into hundreds of thousands of dead and wounded, shattered cities, towns, and infrastructure, and millions of refugees. Trump committed political heresy when he dared to point out the folly of unchecked militarism. He will pay for that. The deep state intends to replace him with someone, perhaps Mike Pence, as morally and intellectually vacuous as Trump, who will do what he or she is told. This is the role of America's executive. Personify and humanize the empire. Do so with pomp and dignity. Barack Obama, who speciously reinterpreted the 2001 authorization for use of military force to give the executive, meaning himself, the right to assassinate anyone abroad, even a U.S. citizen, deemed to be a terrorist, and they excelled at this game. The removal of Trump from office would not threaten corporate power. It would not restore civil liberties, including our right to privacy and due process. It would not demilitarize the police or champion the rights of the working class. It would not impede the profits of the fossil fuel and banking industries. It would not address the climate emergency. It would not disrupt the warrantless surveillance of the public. It would not end extraordinary renditions, the kidnapping of those around the globe considered to be enemies of the state. It would not halt the assassinations of militarized drones, yet by drones. It would not halt the separation of children from their parents and the warehousing of these children in filthy, overcrowded conditions. It would not remedy the consolidation of wealth and power by the oligarchs and the further impoverishment of the citizenry. The expansion of our prison system and the black sites throughout the world, sites where we torture, would continue as they gun down the poor, unarmed citizens in urban wastelands. Most importantly, the catastrophic foreign wars that have resulted in a series of failed states and wasted trillions of taxpayers' dollars would remain sacrosanct, enthusiastically embraced by the leaders of the two ruling parties, puppets of the deep state. So just let us be very clear. The impeachment of Trump, despite the enthusiasm of the liberal elite, is mostly cosmetic. The entire political and governmental system is corrupt. Hunter Biden was reportedly paid $50,000 a month to sit on the board of the Ukrainian gas company Burisma Holdings, although he has no training, no experience in the gas industry. He had previously worked for the credit card corporation MBNA, which was one of Joe Biden's largest campaign contributors when he was a senator from Delaware. Hunter Biden was hired by Burisma Holdings for the same reason he was hired by MBNA. His father, long a tool of corporate power in the military-industrial complex, in short, the deep state, was a senator and later the vice president. Joe Biden, the Clintons, the Democratic Party leaders personify the legalized bribery that defines their rivals in the Republican Party. Corporate candidates in the two ruling parties are pre-selected, funded, and anointed. If they do not abide by the demands of the deep state, which protects corporate interests and the management of the empire, they are removed. There's even a word for it, primarying. Corporate lobbyists write the laws, the courts enforce them. There is no way in the American political system to vote against the interests of Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, AT&T, Amazon, Microsoft, Walmart, Alphabet, Facebook, Apple, ExxonMobil, Lockheed Martin, United Health Group, or Northrop. We, the American public, are spectators, an audience who will be seated when the game of musical chairs stops. I'm going to share with you a letter. It's brief, that we sent today to every member of the board of the Wikimedia Foundation that controls Wikipedia, all of its officers, we're putting him once again on notice. And the reason we're putting him on notice is because when you provide an individual with absolute documentation, irrefutable documentation, that something is amiss in what they're doing, then they have an opportunity to correct that. And that would be the right thing. They have corrected nothing. They just keep doubling down. And I believe that that's due to the person that co-created and runs Wikipedia, Jimmy Wells, and his hand-selected board. So this is the letter that is up there today. And trust me, a lot of people are getting this letter. We've been sending all of our correspondence to all the different federal and state agencies. And my hope is that very shortly, with all the opportunity we've given them, because when we've given them all this opportunity to make the changes and provided the documentation that they themselves can review and their lawyers can review, when they see what kind of mass disinformation campaign by this cabal within their organization, then they cannot feign ignorance. That means malice aforethought. That, in legal terms, means that if a jury should hear a case, they're going to provide damages. And that should give them some concern. But egos abound, and unfortunately, when egos abound and ideologies are at the front door protecting anyone from getting in, common sense and reason are almost always victimized. Quote, I am following up on my prior correspondence to you. The members of the board of the Wikimedia Foundation, its officers, and other responsible individuals, to further illustrate the toxic effects of having all entries on health and medicine controlled by a cabal of radical skeptics. Another prime example of this is on the topic of Ayurveda and Ayurvedic treatments. Please review the attached article entitled Wikipedia's Hate Campaign Against Ayurveda. Note the differences in coverage by a real encyclopedia, the Encyclopedia Britannica, which provided balanced coverage in Wikipedia's condemnation of this medical system. This is where Wikipedia's so-called experts, the skeptics, are on the wrong side of peer-reviewed science and clinical experience. There are 450,000 Ayurvedic registered physicians in India alone, and there are 250 accredited Ayurvedic schools. Ayurveda is recognized by the Higher Science Board in India as a legitimate healing science, and there are 5,500 studies in the peer-reviewed literature to support this. And yet, Wikipedia's coverage of Ayurveda would discourage users from investigating it further because it has been wrongfully labeled as pseudoscience and quackery. The act of deliberately dissuading millions of people from considering the possible benefits of a well-proven healing system presents a clear and present danger that we believe is a crime against humanity. This is also part of what we believe is a conspiracy by a cabal, including Jimmy Wells and each of the board members and officers, because you have repeatedly been made aware of the indiscretions and blatant falsehoods of many of Wikipedia entries that have a direct impact upon users' health. Such fabrications on the encyclopedia's alternative medical pages in the biographies of its leading practitioners have had the consequence of destroying individual reputations. We believe the evidence supports a legal judgment against those who have been directly complicit and have enabled this practice to continue at an executive level. Once again, we highlight the fact that one of today's leading authorities on Ayurvedic and alternative and complementary medicine, who is frequently cited and quoted favorably in quality peer-reviewed literature, is Deepak Chopra. The point of fact is that the U.S. government has created and funds a division of alternative and complementary medicine under the National Institutes of Health. And most medical schools now recognize the legitimacy of many traditional non-conventional medical disciplines. And in addition, some insurance companies now cover many of these therapies that Wikipedia and its skeptics attack and ridicule. Therefore, we are demanding that the following individuals immediately have their biographies removed from Wikipedia, and references to these individuals and other health-related pages should be expunged. Dr. Deepak Chopra, Dr. Gary Nall, Dr. Dean Radin, Dr. Rupert Sheldrick, and Dr. David Perlmutter. And that's it. But just put this word out. It is time for a reckoning. It is time that we, the people, took on the charge of bringing Wikipedia, its skeptics, its anonymous editors, its board of directors, into a congressional hearing where, under oath, they would be challenged and shown all the documentation we have provided. And we, on the other hand, would have a chance, under oath, to talk about real science, not the illegitimate science that says that something is quackery, when there are 500 million people in India alone receiving Ayurvedic treatment from 450,000 physicians. But they don't let you know that. We do. We have 71 additional articles coming on Wikipedia. As of today, if you go to prn.fm, and you should, and download the articles, each and every one is different. Wikipedia and chiropractic, Ayurvedic medicine, body-mind medicine. Every single thing shows you the legitimacy of what they attack. So what's their agenda? Why are they doing this? How could anyone be so wrong and still not be challenged by the mainstream media or Congress? Well, we're making everyone aware of it, providing everyone with the documentation. Sooner or later, the class action lawsuits will begin. Sooner or later, individual lawsuits will begin. Sooner or later, congressional hearings will begin. But it makes a difference when people in this audience speak up and speak out. We're going to take a brief break directly to a tape on Puerto Rico. And this, again, this is from the people who are doing very clever satire called Honest Government. They're from Australia. This one deals with Puerto Rico. When we come back from that, I'll give some comments upon the current status of the battle to get back WBAI. Please stay with us.
Colony, I mean territory. The Caribbean island famous for its tropical beaches, historic icons, breathtaking scenery, but mostly for Despacito. Fortunately, however, few know about the real Puerto Rico, a territory of the United States since 1898, when we seized it from the Spanish, America. Who in turn stole it from the Taino, which makes Puerto Ricans U.S. citizens, well, second-class citizens, because despite fighting in every one of our wars, they still can't vote for president and have no representation in Congress. In other words, U.S. citizens who have false say in the laws the U.S. government makes for them. And to bring you the ultimate colonial experience, we've made a few over the years. Like the gag law, which banned their flag and brutally suppressed independence movements. Bombing the Battle of Vieques for 60 years. Conducting birth control experiments on Puerto Rican women. And of course, the Jones Act, which enforced a U.S. corporate monopoly that crippled local industry and, along with other, created tons of debt. Debt which Wall Street vulture funds bought up like blood-sucking chupacabras. And when Puerto Ricans could no longer pay back that debt, we made a new law. No, not to ease poverty and unemployment, but to impose austerity measures, cutting pensions and the minimum wage, gutting university funding, closing down schools and hospitals. Today, many Puerto Ricans are fleeing the island from this unholy show we created. Which, of course, gives rich gringos the chance to move in and buy up tropical beaches at a discount. Don't miss our special neo-colonial tax holiday package. And you, too, can be a pirate of the Caribbean, sipping pina colada with chupacabras, while Puerto Ricans get kicked out of their homes. Visit Puerto Rico, the island you never even knew we were colonizing the shit out of. Authorized by the Department for the War and Territories. Also responsible for shit in American Samoa.
Okay. We have a lot more of those coming. Now, I'm going to give you some insight, and I want you to know that you can watch those audio clips so you see the video and audio. Please make note of this, that all you have to do is go to youtube.com/prnfm. Again, youtube.com/prnfm, and you can watch them. You're going to want to watch this one coming up in a few minutes. It's by Dr. Claire Edwards, and it's simply, wow, does she hit it out of the ballpark. This is a major international symposium of scientists. It sounded like it was in a Nordic state. And if it was all science. She was the only one who does present science, but also she presented it, the first part of it, common sense. Common sense, then in comes the science after that. So it's a double layered. It was Norway. So got that right. And one of the things that no one seems to feel interested in is, what do you gain by excluding people from your audience, bragging about, priding yourself, beating your chest over that you don't want certain people to listen to your show because they're not pure enough in their ideology? Well, one day you got three people listening to your show. And right now in every one of the five markets, we're dead last in every market, dead last. There's one exception in Washington, D.C., and I looked at the Arbitrons, and it's only because there are two other stations where it says not available data, so they're one above that. But in every other market, they're dead last. So how in the hell do you go from being at the top to the bottom by just what I said you lack? Alienating audience, not honoring on pledges, not putting programs on there that people want to hear, instead programming what you want to hear, what you believe is ideologically correct. So if we get back on the air, we better have a whole new mindset, because the old mindset is what's gotten us to this place. I hope that someone is willing to acknowledge that a lot of mistakes were made, and maybe we should put the audience's interest first and not dead last as an afterthought. One last thing I want to mention. I want to thank Black Agenda Report, Jimmy Dore, Ralph Nader, for letting them know that until this is finally over, their shows will not be aired on WBAI. And I'm concerned by the double standards that Amy Goodman is airing every day, and yet she doesn't raise any money. In my opinion, that is a contradiction, because if any other show chose not to raise money and aired every day, then what does it tell all the other producers? That if you don't raise money, you're off the air. If you pass that line, you're off the air. Wow, what hypocrisy. Isn't it time we address these open and honestly? Unless there is an absolutely permanent double standard, then just be honest about it. In which case, then we're no different than the Democratic National Convention or the Republicans or any other group out there. Those are some thoughts I wanted to share. I realize I went a little longer, so I'm not going to have all the time for the other clips. We'll get to those on tomorrow's show. But I want to play a couple clips now that are important. This is from PG&E, and it's about smart meters. I'm going to save the one for tomorrow about Dr. Claire Edwards and the madness of putting 53,000 5G satellites in space. And by the way, I was talking with Richard Gell last night, and we realized we have more battles to fight now than ever before. We're fighting the 5Gs. We're fighting the mandatory vaccines. We're fighting the GMOs. We're fighting the deep state. And I want to play you this short clip of who's going to be my guest tomorrow night. Jesse, would you play this 12-second clip, please?
I need as many eyes on me as possible, because assassination is a real threat. And the more people that look at me, the harder it is for them carry out such an operation. Also, we're exposing the deep state, and we're fighting back, and we're going to win.
All right. That's my guest tomorrow night. We're taking on Google tomorrow night. We're looking at it from many perspectives. We have some guests lined up, whistleblowers, some who've gone to prison. But is his statement that he fears for his life, is it realistic or just paranoid? We're asking him, does he know things he has not yet said that he feels that if it was made public, that would cause him to be put in the crosshairs by someone? We'll find that out tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour. Tomorrow night you won't want to miss this, because the deep secrets of Google from one of its engineers who worked there for 10 years is being revealed. And he's an official whistleblower. He took documents out that show what they were doing. So then we have to ask a deeper question. Who's behind Google? What's its real motives? How much power does it have? So it's going to be a very comprehensive examination. That said, we're going to finish our program today with the PG&E Smart Meters Catch Fire by a person testifying at a state hearing.
A meter reader for 9.5 years with PG&E in the Marin office before I was illegally fired because I was not intimidated into being quiet with the problems I saw firsthand regarding smart meters. Knows that they do catch on fire when they are remotely turned back on when a customer who is delinquent in their bill finally pays their bill. These meters catch fire. They know it, and they are covering it up. When I started working at PG&E, the annual budget in meter reading was $70 million for roughly 1,000 meter readers. My supervisor, who was my best friend at the time, told me this. The Public Utility Commission and PG&E continually lie to the customers saying it is a $2.2 billion system when the Public Utility Commission and PG&E, when questioned by a law firm suing over smart meters, admit it's a $10 billion system. PG&E tells their own employees it is a $10 billion system. That makes this illegal because it is a crime of fraud against the consumers of California. When you divide the annual cost a meter reading into the $10 billion this system never, ever, ever comes close to breaking even. You cannot allow PG&E to charge extra for a meter reader to come read a customer's meter when they already do it infinitely cheaper. I also like to point out the fact that no one else in PG&E does surveys for the gas department but the meter readers. Thank you.
Why is that important? Because first off, no one should be allowing a smart meter into their homes. We have published an article, and you can read it in the archives, of how dangerous smart meters are. But also now they catch fire. That's another one of the things we should be concerned about. I do want to take a few minutes to challenge what I'm hearing in all these debates about, on the one hand, the conservatives in the media say that we do not want a socialized system that's equivalent to the communists, and we are a free market enterprise. And on the other side, you have the social democrats saying, but we need to have free education and free health care. Both are incorrect. We should have universal health care, unless you want to opt out and have your own private insurance, in which case you should be allowed that right. But the idea that it should cost $20 to $60 trillion is absurd. If you go up on our website, prn.fm, and read the article about how do we get to universal health care, we actually save money. Because what they're both doing, Elizabeth Warren in particular, they want to keep the profit in the existing system, meaning they want the system to stay the way it is. They just want someone else other than the consumer to pay for it. But what if you took out all these excessive profits, taking out the administration? That's $1.1 trillion a year. Taking out all the malpractice and the defensive medicine, that's $200 billion a year. So when you take out the excessive profit from the products, meaning the drugs, you're saving almost $250 billion a year. And now we've detailed where all the money could be saved, and yet everyone in the existing system, except for the insurance companies, could actually still make a legitimate profit, just not an excessive profit. And these are very documented and detailed, correct figures. We sent this to Cortez. We sent this to Bernie Sanders. But no one seems to be paying attention to that. So we could do this. Separately, we are a combination, a hybrid, of both a capitalist and a socialist system. For those who would argue on Barney and Company, on Fox, that, you know, these crazy socialists, a few facts. $100 billion to Wall Street firms and corporations, military-industrial complex that we give. $100 billion. That's what we subsidize. We give to the military corporations. Who do you think gives these people contracts to allow them to do research on systems like the stupid, and that also includes Bernie Sanders, the C-35? It's now $1.5 trillion, and will likely go to $2 trillion just for an aircraft that was never needed to begin with. So we subsidize that. We, the people, pay for all those military research and procurements. Also, the fossil fuel and hydrofracking. Hydrofracking have lost over $250 billion of their own money. So they've been subsidized by the American public, as has big oil and nuclear. Nuclear is subsidized by the American public. In fact, since private insurance companies won't insure for disasters, we pay for that. There's industrial agriculture. We subsidize them. The pharmaceutical research grants and funding, we subsidize them. The seasonal flu shots, subsidizing the form of massive purchases, we subsidize them. And also the federal employees' benefits, including universal health care, we subsidize them. Veterans' benefits that civilians don't have access to, we subsidize them. Police departments, social. Fire departments, social. Public schools, social. All we get is universal health coverage. So we have to understand we have always been, and I'm not even mentioning welfare and housing and WICs for moms and food stamps. I'm just mentioning ones that people rarely use in their argument. So the next time someone says that, you know, let them earn a living on their own, and the profits we make in the democracy we have, which is not actually a democracy, and based on capitalism, but the capitalism we're doing today is not the capitalism of the 1940s and 50s and 60s. This is vulture capitalism, and they're even profiting off people's debt and suffering, private prisons, and the war on drugs. So we have always been a combination, a hybrid of both capitalism and socialism, as it should be, what is fair and beneficial. It's just that the public never is allowed to have someone pay for their bad mistakes and debt, and corporations, including the banking system, expect that everything that they do in the way of mistakes will be subsidized. That's socialism to them. And there's another way of looking at it. What if we said, if your bank makes mistakes, if you make faulty investments, and you bet the wrong way, and you lose money, then you should go out of business, and you should have your reputation affected for being a bad manager. You wouldn't have a single person left in the Wall Street financial industry. And if you said the same thing to the people in industries, I hired two lawyers to tell me, and it took a year to do it, how many lawsuits have the pharmaceutical industries lost and how much money they have to pay? And it was the hundreds of billions of dollars, and it was over 300,000 lawsuits. So if you make a product and that product is knowingly going to hurt people, but you realize you're going to make a lot of profit and you're only going to pay a small percentage in fees and fines, then that's also a form of socialism because you're able to write all that off through tax rights. That means the public's not benefiting from a full income because whatever you paid, $5 billion in the Vioxx suit, that's written off. The average person can't do that. They can. So you see, you have to look at the shadow way that socialism works for the rich and powerful. They have been the biggest exploiters of it and the greatest beneficiaries from it. Who benefited from the tax cuts? The average person? Not one. But the big companies buying back their own treasury stock, increasing the value of their stock, taking bigger bonuses? Yes, they did. So the next time I see these people arguing, I wish they would bring people on the air who know how to counterbalance their arguments. Just some thoughts. I'm Gary Noll. We have a lot more to do this week. We're bringing some new articles, and we're going to take on the New York Times on Wednesday in a full investigative report. It's time someone investigated the investigators, and we're doing it. Have a nice day, everyone.
One can have a dream, baby. Two can make that dream.